Malaysians were hoping elections would lead to political stability. But the parliamentary vote on Saturday produced no outright winner. That's left Malaysia with the first hung parliament in its history. So, what happens now? And what does it mean for the country's democracy? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. Compromise seems the only way forward for politicians in Malaysia. That's after a very tight race left parliament with no clear winner. A coalition between the main runners is now the only way to form a government. Battling for majority support in the lower house of parliament are familiar faces, opposition leader Anwar Ibrahim and his rival and former premier Muhyiddin Yassin. Both say they have enough support to rule. It's a familiar scenario in the capital, Kuala Lumpur, that's seen three prime ministers in the last 4 years. If a compromise isn't agreed, the king can appoint a politician as prime minister who he believes will command a majority in parliament. Florence Louis reports from the capital.
Malaysians woke up to an uncertain future on Sunday. With no clear winner in the general election, negotiations have begun to determine who will join forces to make up the majority in parliament. Opposition bloc, the Alliance of Hope, led by Anwar Ibrahim, has the most seats, but not enough. Perikatan Nasional, or National Alliance, is the second largest coalition. It's met with leaders of a regional party based in Sarawak State, who now has the potential to be kingmaker.
I am quite unsettled because now the Alliance of Hope and Perikatan Nasional are going neck and neck. I am hoping for the best for the new government.
I just hope that they are all united because in the end, it's really about the country, it's for the people and it's for the future.
Some analysts say it's possible the same parties that were in power before parliament was dissolved could work together again, which may upset some voters as this alliance would include Barisan Nasional or the National Front, whose leaders are tainted by corruption.
The most important thing is for Perikatan Nasional to only choose or appoint candidates or parliamentarians that don't have any issues with corruption. There are plenty of those and they can be part of the government. And the second part of it is that Perikatan Nasional will have to remain convicted on the dedication towards prosecuting those with corruption charges.
One winner in this election is the Malaysian Islamic Party, a partner in the National Alliance. It's now the largest party in parliament.
By Monday afternoon, Malaysians should know who their new prime minister will be. The palace has issued a statement asking leaders of the political parties with the most seats and heads of the major coalitions to nominate a lawmaker who they think is able to command the confidence of the majority in parliament.
King Al-Sultan Abdullah has had a hand in determining the prime minister before. In 2020, after interviewing MPs, the monarch chose Muhyiddin Yassin. And when his administration collapsed a year later, the king chose a successor. History, it seems, could repeat itself. Florence Louis, Al Jazeera, Kuala Lumpur.
All right, let's bring in our guests from the capital, Kuala Lumpur. Sophie Lemire is a political anthropologist and a consultant. O.E. Sun is a senior fellow at Singapore Institute of International Affairs. And Tricia Yeo is chief executive of the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today on Inside Story. Tricia, let me start with you today. So Malaysia has its first hung parliament in its history. What happens now, and what does this mean for the country's democracy?
Thank you for having me. So this absolutely right. It is the first time for Malaysia to experience a hung parliament after an election, not necessarily a hung parliament ever. But what are the next steps from here on? It's very clear. Any leader of the parliament who is able to convince the agong or the king that he is able to form a government will be invited to form a government. That has already been done in the last few hours. And the palace has also issued a statement as of today calling for parties with a large number of seats to provide the names of the coalitions that will be formed, that they would like to form, as well as their prime ministerial candidate by 2 p.m. tomorrow, following which the Agong would therefore decide on who has this coalition possibility of forming the government. After that, it's basically all systems go. What does this mean for Malaysia's democracy? Essentially, you know, we saw the largest turnout of voters ever in Malaysia's electoral history with the 5.8 million new voters. It was actually quite difficult to expect what the turnout would be, but it has looked like, you know, people did come out in droves despite the rain in certain parts of the country. So there were some surprises in this election, but ultimately, if this can be resolved over the next 24 hours, what we would have is the form of political stability as well as economic stability that the country really has needed over the last 4 years.
Sophie, I saw you reacting to some of what Tricia was saying there. So I wanted to see if you wanted to jump in. And also, I want to ask you, I mean, what kind of timeline do you think we're going to see going forward when it comes to forming a coalition?
Well, the discussions are ongoing since last night. It has been pretty intense for every observer and even more for the politicians who are in the game right now. And we know that a few have been sidelined from the game. We had a few surprises, and it's that what made me smile when Tricia was speaking. We did not expect, you know, this well, we could call it a wave, you know, wave of support for the Islamist Party that gained, you know, an incredible number of seats compared to 2018. And I think that this shows that, you know, the Malaysian youth who are first-time voters, actually we had first-time voters as well who are older, you know, so as I've been voting in mass for the Islamist Party, which is a very interesting phenomenon. I mean, from outside of Malaysia, a lot of observers assume that, you know, this younger electorate would definitely be a more liberal one. So it's very interesting to see that, you know, their voices, their opinion in a very different direction compared to what was expected by some people.
Ihsan, let me ask you to elaborate a little bit on what Sophie was talking about. These gains that were made by the Islamic Party in Malaysia, does this mean that Malaysians are increasingly voting along religious lines?
Well, Malaysians have been voting along religious and racial lines since, modern time immemorial, right? And I think over the last few years, you have seen, for example, the non-Malays more voting for the reformist side of the political spectrum, while the large portion of conservative Malay voters would prefer at that time UMNO and by a lesser extent this Islamist PAS party. Now we are essentially seeing a reverse of the preference of these conservative Malay voters, namely their first choice is the Islamist PAS party, and perhaps a second or third choice would be the more racialist UMNO party. Well, moving forward, I think as this PAS party gains more influence throughout Peninsula Malaysia, we are likely to see more seats falling to their hands in future elections as well. Already, we are seeing, for example, yet another state, the state of police in the extreme north of Malaysia, now falling into the hand of this Islamist PAS party. And they are also making the headways towards the west and the south of Peninsula Malaysia.
Tricia, from your perspective, were the results in any way a surprise?
So I think just before the election, there were a lot of different polling companies that came up with their expected outcomes. For me, there were two things that were not surprising. First, we knew that, or at least I expected that there would not be any single coalition able to pass the simple majority required to form a government. That much has happened. So a hung parliament was very much expected. So that was no surprise. The second thing was what we're seeing now, which is the active negotiations taking place, where a coalition government, basically a coalition of coalitions, is in the works, where because no one coalition can form government, the negotiations have had to take place, seeking out coalitions from other parts of the geographical regions of Malaysia, essentially in East Malaysia, Sabah and Sarawak. So the second thing, that's also no surprise. I think as has already been stated in this interview so far, PAS, the Islamic Party, the performance of PAS, that was probably the most major surprise. I expected them to do very well in the smaller rural states of the north and the east coast of Peninsular Malaysia, which they have done well in. But I think to sweep the lion's share of the seat. So now they are the single largest party in parliament of the 222 seats. They have, you know, 44, 49. I think it differs according to the calculations, but basically they are the lion's shareholder of seats. What does this mean? Essentially, they are here to stay. I think there are very different reasons why the Malay electorate chose to go with this coalition. And we don't know enough information at this point, but I can just, you know, suffice to say that number one, they were unhappy with the ruling Barisan National Coalition or the UMNO Coalition, the less racialized one that Ihsan pointed out. And it was an alternative for them. And I think this trend is something that we've seen in other Muslim countries around the world, right? So if you don't want to go with the corrupt version of a party, the other alternative would be the Islamic version. And that's what we've seen. So that's one, that's clear. The second thing, of course, is the rise of this conservatism, and I don't know that we have enough information that indicates to us that the young chose that path because of that reason. I think that is what the speculation is at the moment. It's very easy to make those generalizations, but I think, yeah, we cannot pack like what the detailed reasons were for people being motivated to vote along that path.
Ihsan, Tricia was talking there about having to essentially form a coalition of coalitions. And she was talking about the fact that the key to the formation of any government is going to be states like Sabah and Sarawak. And I want to ask you a little bit about that. I mean, these are states that have long sought to have greater influence at the federal level, correct?
Yeah, I happen to be from the state of Sabah myself. Indeed, you would see that the politicians of these East Malaysian states, they would often make up the case for more autonomy, for more devolution of powers to these East Malaysian states, to the extent that they would like more shares of, for example, the country's revenues for the development and so on. While I think there's a genuine need for more developments in these least developed states of Malaysia. On the other hand, I think when it comes to political calculations, such as whether the political parties or coalition or seats from these East Malaysian states would join which particular major West Malaysian coalition, I think the calculation is very much made more on, for example, the vested interests of the politicians involved, much more than, for example, the improvement of livelihood of the people there.
Sophie, obviously, you know, all kinds of horse trading and negotiations have already started in Malaysia. I guess what I'm curious about is, does the result of this election mean that parties that were usually considered junior parties or not so important parties, are they now becoming the kingmakers?
Well, it depends who we're calling junior, right? Bersatu is a really young party, and you know, they're taking a leadership role in this negotiation because they're the leading force in PN, even if they don't have the highest number of seats. Then we're looking at MUDA, which is one of the very young party, and they're definitely not a very strong force. Bijuang is one of the youngest party as well, and it was just wiped out. So we have new coalition, that's for sure. We have a very different kind of... We had a shift, a lot of shift, and a fragmentation of the political scene that we've seen, but there is kind of a resettling of, you know, the role of the game and the actors, and it's what's very interesting. We have really a change of power dynamic. This election really showed the strong rejection of UMNO, or at least a one of the factions in UMNO, it shows as well that, you know, KADILAN has not been doing really well during this election. If PH has a very high number of seats, we should remember that it's thanks to DAP as well. So we have, I think, the end of an era, especially for UMNO, for Mohamed Mahathir as well, and for a few very big leaders.
Sophie,
so we're definitely turning a page. There is a new dynamic,
Sophie,
that we need to analyze further once we're going to have more detail on the results.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I am curious to follow up with you about the point you were making about some of these shocks. And you did mention former Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamed, the fact that he lost his parliamentary seat. He's 97 years old. He's one of Asia's most enduring politicians. This was his first electoral defeat in more than half a century. How shocking was that?
Very shocking. So I had the opportunity to follow Mahathir during his 2018 campaign for my book. And I was in Langkawi until the last Jarama, and I was last night in his office as well for the results. So it is shocking. It is shocking for his team. It is shocking for him. So a lot of people did not expect that he would be doing so poorly. We could see that there was a change of wave in Langkawi, definitely. A lot of young people, even if they still do have, you know, a lot of respect for this kind of very strong father figure, the age was a very strong factor. I think during COVID as well, his parliamentary office in Langkawi did not do so well in supporting people of Langkawi. So that really played a lot in this result. Mm. So again, the end of an era. Najib is not in the scene anymore. Mahathir Mohamad is no longer there. A lot of people are calling for Zahid to resign. Mm. This might be as well one of the last time that Anwar is running for a PM position. Mm. So we are seeing like a new generation coming up, and it's actually very interesting.
Tricia, I saw you nodding along to some of what Sophie was saying, so it looked like you wanted to jump in. So please go ahead.
IDS issued a statement today, and we pretty much said the same things, that there is a new generation of fresh faces. If the parties, especially UMNO, were in need of transformation before this election, the results of this election just show how much more internal transformation is needed, not just for UMNO, but across the board. So there is a greater demand. I mean, the fact that we have so many new voters, the kinds of messages and the narratives that need to get out to reach these young voters. I mean, the reality is that politics in Malaysia today are still very much politics of Malaysia, say 10 years ago or 20 years ago even. The kinds of leaders or potential leaders as potential prime minister positions are the same names that have been in circulation for a very long time. There will be increasing demand for this sense of renewal. I think it's going to happen. For UMNO in particular, I mean, if we talk about that for a little bit, not too long ago, they were the dominant party up to 2018. 2018 was the poorest showing. And then this time in 2022, it is again the poorest showing in history. Barisan Nasional as a whole, you know, with only 30 seats, really quite dismal, not yet decimated, you know, sufficient to be able to negotiate and form a bloc in government that's in play at the moment. Both, you know, the Perikatan Nasional and the Pakatan Harapan coalitions that got the largest number of seats as coalitions are actively trying to get Barisan Nasional on their side, because 30 seats can really sway them one way or the other. So we will know by tomorrow. But I think the point here is that with new faces in the game and also transforming of the way in which politics is done in the country, I think that's a lot to think about. And I do hope that this is an opportunity for whichever government comes into power to rethink the entire rules of the game, to think about ways to incentivize younger people to come in, professionals, having institutional reforms that are so crucial to strengthen our parliament, for example. There's so much to be done. And I do hope that this opportunity is just not lost by the forming government.
Ihsan, if Anwar Ibrahim is able to get the support that he needs to become prime minister now, how remarkable a political comeback would that be?
Well, Anwar Ibrahim has been trying to be the prime minister for quite a number of years. I think, according to my count, at least 30 years. He has not been very successful in doing so. But of course, in the process, he has espoused a lot of his ideas and policies for reforming the country and so on. Most of them are very positive. And I think a lot of voters, of course, those who voted for him and his coalition, they're looking forward to these policies being finally implemented. But as things are getting underway for forming coalitions, it would appear that this Perikatan coalition led by Bersatu and this Islamist PAS party, it looks set perhaps to form the next government. And such a coalition would almost inevitably be dominated by the Islamist PAS party because they have the most number of seats in parliament, even though nominally Muhyiddin Yassin would still be the prime minister well for a second term. And if we look at, again, examples from many other such countries, immediately Turkey would come to mind. Mm-hmm. Such a dominance by the Islamist party, typically the country would sort of degenerate into an illiberal democracy, if a democracy at all.
Sophie, we only have a couple of minutes left. Let me just ask you, what were the main issues that voters were concerned about in this election? And also, the fact that voter turnout was so high and that there were so many young voters in particular, what does that say to you about the state of democracy in Malaysia?
Well, I think there is a very strong anxiety, you know, among Malaysians, as it is all around the world, you know, in a post-COVID recovery context. Economy was definitely, you know, what plays a very big role in this campaign. What it means for democracy, well, you know, I mean, we had a very high turnout and we have the result of what democracy is. So there is this new wave of, you know, opinion being expressed, but there is this as well, new demands, as Tricia explained really well. And so we have a landscape that is slowly changing. We have new demands, higher expectations. The results, for sure, might be surprising. But, you know, we might as well see maybe an Islamist party who's going to normalize itself, being, you know, with new responsibility in this coalition. So I think there is a lot to be seen. And we'll see what it means for democracy once the government is being formed. I would wish that, you know, PH could accept or be invited to form a government, and then we would have something very stable. But I'm not sure that this is going to work. Egos are underway, in the way.
And Sophie, just very quickly, we have less than a minute. Do you think that there's a chance that Malaysia's political landscape becomes less fractured now?
No, I think it's going to take a while. This reconfiguration is really going to take time, and I think a lot of people are a little bit hammered by the results, including mm-hmm. the politicians. And you know, the discussion are going very strong, and we might see, you know, some new coalitions and new friendship being created. We have a few independent as well who could actually join some of the coalition, mm-hmm. Despite the law that was put in place. You can still, you know, like independent candidate can be friendly to certain coalitions. To reverse mm-hmm. certain power dynamics. So we might have a few more, you know, change and movement mm-hmm. in the next few weeks. So, you know, we need to keep an eye on that.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Sophie Lemierre, Ihsan, and Tricia Yeo. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.